Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into combat sports.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council.
But it's something else to watch two men at the highest level battle, and one may be favored over the other, but you never know what's going to happen. And that's why boxing is the way it is.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
He comes on damn near Parpedo's full steam ahead.
Pedro Fernandez.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar sports byline studios. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a.k.a. WBC Boxing TV. Often imitated, but hardly duplicated. 37, make that 38 plus years now of knocking out all bums. Who am I? My name is Pedro Fernandez. I am your ever so modest host. I'm also a four-time Golden Glove champion, as well as being an award-winning boxing writer. So allegedly, supposedly, I know a little bit about boxing. But guess what? I've always found that the average fan probably knows more. So if you'd like to impart, drop your opinion in. Here's the toll-free phone line, 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Of course, there's also the guilt-free, no-commitment text line. You can text us here in the studio, 415-275-1613. The studio text line, once again, 415-275-1613. It's 11:06, 11:07 a.m. Pacific time. That's 2:06 p.m. Eastern time. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide, coming to you for 2 hours live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Channel 217, and like 1,000 other internet platforms. So I'm glad you're along for the show. We'll talk boxing and MMA. Of course, boxing hour number one. I'm going to concentrate on history to an extent and look back at the career of Arturo Gatti, Arturo Thunder Gatti, probably one of the most face-first, exciting fighters in the world, in the minds of a lot of people. I mean, the average square loved Arturo Gatti. He was a fun guy to be around, a party animal, no doubt about that. And, of course, he died very controversially. So we'll talk about his life and his death in depth today on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Once again, open phone lines all around the planet. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. We're coming to you live on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. This is video. We're rocking it from the city by the bay, San Francisco, California.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC. Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
You know, just excited to be back. I wish we could do a fight every night. You know me, Pedro.
You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, coming to you from the city by the bay, San Francisco, California. Of course, a quiet week in the world of boxing because the heavyweight championship of the world was supposed to take place last night. I'm talking about Tyson Fury, of course, defending against the ex-champion Deontay Wilder, of course, the third fight after the trouncing the second time and after him getting beat up like a girl the first time. Sorry about that, girls, but the bottom line, it was like a guy and a girl. I'm talking about that first fight. I mean, with the exception of getting knocked down twice, Tyson Fury, I believe, in the ninth and the 12th round, he owned Mr. Wilder that night. Of course, in the rematch, he owned him almost every second, or he didn't win a minute. That's my old saying on Deontay Wilder as far as the rematch was concerned. Didn't win a minute. So he's going to have a third fight. Why? Because I think he needs to cash out. I think there's nothing but cash going on here. As far as the heavyweight champions is concerned, Tyson Fury, of course, undefeated like in 30 fights with that one controversial draw against Wilder. He wants to fight Anthony Joshua. Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua is the mega fight. Of course, Anthony Joshua got out of his Sky Sports contract by getting a mandatory fight by the WBO, according to the World Boxing Organization, with Oleg Usyk, of course, a former cruiserweight champion. So he's a little guy moving up, but he's been beaten by guys that are lesser than him. I'm talking about Anthony Joshua. Of course, Andy Ruiz beat him up and knocked him out. Of course, the second fight was a different story when Andy showed up looking like he had trained with well, let's put it this way. He didn't train for that second fight. Everybody knew it. Remember the lines on the table? You know what I'm talking about. Anyway, bottom line is Andy Ruiz trying to put himself back together. But the heavyweight champion is Tyson Fury. I mean, the giant gypsy, no doubt about that. And the people that fight him don't believe that they're fighting a guy that big because he's 6'9" and awkward. And he can box. And he can do that Pernell Whitaker stuff at heavyweight. I mean, he's doing stuff juking and jiving at heavyweight that Pernell Whitaker and guys like that would do it welterweight and lightweight. So the bottom line is he's got some adept skills as far as his boxing skills are concerned, no doubt about that. Now, he's dominated Deontay Wilder twice, but Wilder's got the that right hand. Outside of that, he's, you know, one trick. He's a one trick pony. Outside of the right hand, he's got nothing but a mouth. I mean, the excuses, the stamina, like the footwork, the jab, the lack of all this stuff. The lack of all this stuff. Didn't like to work the heavy bag. And now he's got Malik Scott. Remember Malik Scott? We used to talk about Malik Scott on this show. He was a heavyweight pretender at one point in time. Yeah, he took, put it this way. He had a very suspicious fight. A very, very, very suspicious fight with Deontay Wilder in Puerto Rico. I think it ended in the first round, but it was very suspicious. And you know what I'm trying to say by very suspicious? It smelled. Anyway, I think it was in the U.S. the fight, the Athletic Commission would have got involved and said, you know, something was a little amiss there, but in Puerto Rico, they gave that a pass. At the end of the day, he is the new trainer, of course, replacing Mark Breland. Mark Breland, the 1984 Olympic gold medalist, the stud. He was, I mean, Mark was a stud. You know, at 139, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, weight divisions, things like that. But at 140, there weren't a whole lot of guys I thought could beat me. But at 147, there was Mark Breland. I remember we were in Colorado Springs, and I wanted to spar with him, this and that. And then I got next to him, sized up next to him, and I realized, this guy's like in another world. I mean, he's got arms that reach his knees, and he's 6'2". Okay, yikes, this was a nightmare. Anyway, I realized I could have never beat Mark Breland. Once I faced up next to him and realized this would not go well if me and Mark Breland were to rumble. But that's 147 pounds. So later on in the show, we'll be talking with Stitch Duran in hour number 2 about weight classes, of course, what Stitch has got going on. He is the premier cut man in the world, both boxing and MMA. Of course, the heavyweight champion of cut man. I've known him for like, how old is he now? 60? I'm 60 something. I've known him for like 50 something years. Bottom line is, he worked one of my corners when I was in the amateurs in a boys club fight. So the bottom line is, we go back 50 years. Stitch Duran and I will talk about boxing in depth at hour number 2. Now, Joe Joyce was a winner last night. Joe Joyce is a heavyweight sensation, unbeaten out of the UK. Of course, he's a guy that he can fight a little bit. He doesn't look fat, but he looks thick. He's a thick looking heavyweight. No doubt about that. 6'3", decent size, throws punches okay. Was losing against Carlos Takam last night, but he stopped Takam in the 6th round. Takam's corner said he was suspicious. I say, it's boxing. Listen, if you're not the franchise fighter, if you're the opponent and you give somebody an opportunity to stop the fight, that's on you. That's on you, because you're not supposed to win. Oh, why am I saying that? Because I'm being true about this, okay? The bottom line is, the matchmaker, the promoter, everybody in the world has picked you not to win this fight. That's why they said, hey, let's get a fight with this guy, because we think we can beat him, okay? Obviously, it doesn't always work out that way, but most of the time it does. And as far as pound for pound is concerned right now, pound for pound fighters, Canelo Alvarez is going to go September 18th, of course, with Caleb Plant. Caleb Plant, the undefeated WBA title holder. I say title holder, of course, I should say champion, WBA champion, of course, out of, I think, Nashville originally, now fighting out of Las Vegas. Decent amateur, but he's going to get lit up like a White House Christmas tree. In fact, if these guys were gay, it'd be domestic violence. This is the way it is. Canelo Alvarez in a league of his own right now at 168 pounds. As far as 175 is concerned, Canelo going back to 175, who knows? Andre Ward, of course, I talked about that in depth. Andre Ward, in fact, we'll get into that with Stitch Duran in hour number 2. Of course, Andre was one of his clients, per se. But well, Andre Ward, you know, I mean, Andre Ward is in shape. There's something going on there. I really think there's something going on there, because when I was watching, for the most part, I was watching Andre get old on ESPN. I was, you know, watching him age and this and that. And then all of a sudden, it's like he took the youth pill. Like he took the youth pills or something like that. And 3 months later, he looks like a well-conditioned athlete. And of course, I hear he's working out with Virgil Hunter and those guys down there in Hayward, California. So the bottom line is he talking about a comeback? Will he come back for that one fight with Canelo Alvarez? Of course, that fight would make him more money than he made in his entire career. He wasn't a big money maker. Of course, the undefeated 2004 Olympic gold medalist fought at 178 pounds, was really a middleweight, but decided he would move up to 178 to do a favor for a friend of his. But the bottom line is, he fought at 178. Nobody thought he could win because he was so outsized, but yet he went in there and he outboxed everybody and won the gold medal. Of course, coming home, the 2004 Olympic gold medalist, he got rocked early on in his pro career, and then they were saying, oh, he didn't have a good chin. He didn't have a good chin. Well, the guy beat everybody in his path. The first fight was Sergey Kovalev, the then WBO, I take it back, the coming back WBO light heavyweight champion. Of course, that was a close fight. Could have went either way. But the second fight, very dominant performance by Mr. Andre Ward. No doubt about it. Of course, he is the king as far as pound for pound was concerned. That weight era, I mean, 175, 168, he was king. Now, will he come back? I tend to think so. I mean, I just think the money will be just the financial offer to fight him next May. We're talking about Canelo Alvarez, or maybe next February, would just be too much. I mean, if they keep saying, well, will you fight him for $10 million? No, $15 million. I mean, you got to start thinking. When somebody starts offering you $15 or $20 million to fight somebody, you know, and you're kicking back at home and you're in decent shape, and then you have the confidence that Andre Ward has. I mean, come on. He hasn't lost a fight in his entire life. That one fight that he lost over at King's Gym in Oakland, California, I think he was a junior Olympian at the time, like 14, 15 years old. He sort of got robbed on that one. Happens in the amateurs all the time. All the time. But the bottom line is he got robbed in that one fight. So technically, he's undefeated in life, both as an amateur and as a professional. So give him his props. How many guys can say that? Not too many. I mean, the great Ray Leonard can't say that. Mike Tyson can't say that. Vanderholt, none of these guys can say that, but he did. He retired undefeated, but will he stay that way? Of course, the only guy to really retire undefeated and stay that way that I can think of in recent years, of course, was Joe Calzaghe, the WBO and world 168-pound champion. He came to us from, I think, from Wales, but he retired like at 40, 45, you know, something like that. But the bottom line is he retired undefeated. He'd go back, probably have to go back before, like to Rocky Marciano. For a significant fighter to retire undefeated. They just don't retire undefeated because this game is all about the young eating the old. I mean, that's just, you know, it's life. It's sort of life. The young eagle eats the old eagle. It just beats up the old eagle. That's just the way it is. That's what you call boxing. Life is all about time, and time is coming to an end for a fighter. And of course, he's a name and this and that. When fighters are names, they get used and abused, but they get promoted in a way where they can make themselves some money that they can't make in any other aspect of life. That's why it's so important for fighters to have additional outlets. Andre Ward, case in point, man, he's got ESPN, he's got, you know, all these different channels. He was with HBO for a while, so he's rocking and rolling as a TV announcer. Now, is he coming back? I'm leaning towards yes. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live. We're a white little soul side of town here, the Tower of Power, one of the new, what do they call them, drops? One of the new drops. I call them albums or CDs, but they call them drops these days. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. You're inside looking the world of boxing and MMA.
I care about you. It's kind of rough, but that's all right with me. Because I dig the vibe, and I like the company. It's a wonderful way. That's what the people.
If it's necessary, I'll go 12 rounds, and I see.
Did you go to school, so to speak, on what happened to Rosario when he knocked him down and then got knocked out himself?
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
You know, when I named Hector Camacho the Harlem Heckler, I thought it was going to catch me some heat, and it didn't. He loved it. The Harlem Heckler, he loved that nickname, no doubt about that. May he rest in peace. Now, Arturo Gatti, of course, Arturo Gatti turned pro back in 1991, didn't have much of an amateur career. I mean, he had some fights, but he wasn't like an amateur stud, wasn't a national champion or anything like that, but he's a rough, tough guy. Of course, he would go like 5, 6, 7 fights before losing a split decision, but he would rise to fame. And of course, in 2009, of course, he died very controversially down there in Brazil. Him and his wife, Amanda Rodriguez, a stripper, by the way, she was a stripper when he met her. I'm not trying to knock strippers. But, you know, anyway, they met and they got married and they had a kid and this and that, and they moved to Brazil, and evidently were hanging out in the hotel. And of course, he ended up dying, and she said he hung himself, and people thought that she hung him. But the bottom line is, let's look at his career a little bit. I mean, I look back at Arturo Gatti and I think of a face first fighter. Of course, the guy was very exciting. I mean, if you were that type of guy and you got off on face first type of stuff, you know, like Rock'em Sock'em Robot type of stuff, I mean, that they had it going on, no doubt about that. 40-9 as a pro, he was stopped 5 times, 31 KOs, of course. I remember the later stages of his career. I mean, when he beat Jesse James Leha, I mean, me and Jesse were pretty good buddies. Of course, he beat him in Atlantic City. That was like in 2005. Then he fought Mayweather, and that was like a rout, no doubt about that. And he fought a couple of stiffs. But the guy that he lost to in 2006, July 22nd, 2006, was Carlos Baldomir. Now, I'm going to tell you, if ever there was a guy that I could beat, it was Carlos Baldomir. He was a saddest excuse I could ever imagine for being a welterweight title holder. He won a welterweight title. I didn't believe you not, but he won a welterweight title. Anyway, the bottom line is, he beat Gatti in 2006. And I thought that was it because we were in Atlantic City. Of course, that was like July, I think. And, you know, we're talking about Gotti being done and this kind of stuff. And he said, look, my fight career is probably over. And then 1 year later, he come back and he fought the guy who was like from the Alfonso Gomez, who made his fame, I think, with the TV Contender Series back in the about 2004, 2005. Anyway, bottom line is he lost to Gomez at TKO in 7. Of course, that was in Atlantic City as well. And we knew it was all over at that point in time. But Arturo Gotti, a guy that lived in the fast lane. I'm talking about the, like, the carpool lane. I mean, he was just like cruising all, every time I saw him, he was partying. I mean, and if he wasn't training, if he wasn't in strict training, I mean, strict training where somebody had like, was monitoring him and watching him and following him around, he was drinking. I mean, that was his thing. He was a drunk to an extent. He was big drunk. And, of course, the alcohol was just played right into his hands. He would hold these big parties in Atlantic City before and after fights, not his fights, other fights. He would throw these big parties, like, you know, get a restaurant going on and throw this big party, and Arturo would be leading the party, drinking. So he had an alcohol problem. So at the end of the day, in 2009, people asked me, did he kill himself or did the wife kill him? And, you know, I'm sort of leaning towards the fact that he did kill himself. And I thought it seems highly unlikely, considering the apparatus he used to wrap around his neck and this and sort of hung it from a banister and things like that. So it was a little weird how he did it, but it got done. Because all you got to do is cut off the circulation in your brain for, like, you know, a matter of milliseconds before you go unconscious. And after that point in time, you're DEAD. Okay? So Arturo Gotti, dead, nude, semi-nude in his front room down there. And, of course, this was a big resort, no doubt about those big resort. Him and the wife went for like this get back together type of routine. Of course, they had some issues and they signed a prenuptial agreement, I think, about 6 or 8 weeks before this took place. And that's what makes Amanda look so suspicious in the minds of so many people. I think Arturo Gotti's mother, I don't know if she's still alive, but she sort of thought Amanda was dirty in this. But yet, Gotti's brother, I can't remember his name right now, but he was also a fighter. He didn't think so. He thought Amanda, he gave Amanda a pass on that. He thought that Arturo was like, psychologically off enough that he would try to kill himself. And listen, when you do alcohol, the reason why I don't drink, I like drinking. I do, but you look back at my family tree, we got alcoholics on both sides of the family. Yeah, mom had a booze problem later in life. Yeah, dad had a booze problem probably for most of his life. Okay. Both my grandfathers, one of them really, really bad. Bottom line is it's in the blood. It's in the blood. So I like to drink, but the next day after I drink, I don't feel hungover. I feel like bummed out. I mean, like nothing bummed. I mean, like major bummers. And it just wasn't worth the yin and yang. Just wasn't worth it to me. So I haven't had a drink since June 12th, 2019. And I feel pretty good about that. No doubt about that. But Gotti was a big time drunk. He just couldn't get off the booze, man. I mean, every time I saw him, he reeked of an alcoholic beverage. That's the best way to put it. When he wasn't training, he was partying. I mean, he should have been a Bruno Mars song. I kid you not. But Arturo Gotti was the ultimate partier. At the end of the day, I don't think he was murdered. I think he committed suicide. I think he was weak. I think the fact that, you know, all this booze and drugs and the fact that, you know, your head's been pounded on like a Congo drum. And it wasn't like he wasn't a face first fighter. We talked about that in depth. He was Mr. Face First Fighter. So when you fight with your face, spit tends to happen. When I say spit with an H. No doubt about that. Now, somebody shot me a text here wanting me to tell an Eddie the Clot Aliano story. Of course, he was a cut man. I think he was from the East Coast. Anyway, Philly, New York, somewhere around there. But he worked with a lot of big guys. And most notably, he worked with a guy that I knew by Iran Barkley. So anyway, Eddie the Clot Aliano. I'm looking around here on twitch.tv because I don't want to tell the story with Eddie in the room. Actually, Eddie's spirit would be in the room, but Eddie was a cool guy, but Eddie cheated. Eddie used to use Moncel solution, which was, a toxic thing. It was sort of, it was an oil petroleum product. So it burned the cut back together. So when you would see these cuts on TV, with these old boxers in the old days like Carmen Lucilio and Sugar Ray Robinson, but you saw it especially on the white fighters, is they would have this black, they'd have this cut, but there would be this black stuff underneath it, and that was the Moncel solution that they would use in order to close the cut. But it had metallic particles in it. It had some type of metallic particles. So when Iran Barkley fought Thomas Hearns in June of 1988, who was there? Eddie the Clot Aliano working Barkley's corner. Now Barkley was bleeding like a sieve. I mean, Barkley was, like a river of blood coming out of my city. I said, well, won't be too long before this one's over. And I was right. Barkley ended up knocking him out. I didn't think Barkley was going to knock him out, but because Tommy Hearns was in control. But Tommy was pounding, I mean, pounding on Iran Barkley. But Iran Barkley bleeding like a pig, okay? But Eddie the Clot Aliano used some Moncel solution on him that day. Got the clothes, cut the clothes. Of course, Iran against the ropes. Bang, landed that big left hook, I think, and it was all she wrote it for as far as Thomas Hearns was concerned in that day. And of course, Tommy couldn't beat him in the rematch like 2 years later at 175 pounds. But that day, wow, there was just no doubt about it. Iran Barkley was on top, and the reason why he was able to stay in that fight a little bit later, I think, a little bit longer, was the fact that Eddie the Clot Aliano, who I used to call the human tampon. Only I use a different word for tampon. But the bottom line is he was a guy. As far as stopping cuts was concerned, he was a guy. But he used Moncel solution a lot. Of course, some of the old guys use that, and it's illegal now. It's been illegal for decades. But, you know, he sort of snuck it in there in the 80s, and there's no doubt about that. But he was a good guy to be around. Didn't talk too much, always had a Q-tip in his mouth, but he was classy. He treated me with respect, and Eddie the Clot Aliano was a good guy. And listen, when I say he cheated and use a Moncel solution, it was sort of like, I don't know. It was an illegal solution to use, but it really wasn't illegal per se back there as far as boxing was concerned. So basically anything went back in that era leading up to the 80s. Of course, the Athletic Commission seemed to get their act together in the 1980s, especially like the Nevada State Athletic Commission. The New York State Athletic Commission has always been vastly overrated. They have, of course, I think Randy Gordon was running that for a while. He had a good team going on. And Floyd Patterson was the head of the New York State Athletic Commission, a former two-time world heavyweight champion. Of course, Floyd and I have some great memories, but I remember Floyd, like, they asked him, who's your secretary? They put him in a deposition. You know, because he had Alzheimer's and he's dementia and this thing. And he's the head of the Athletic Commission, okay, or the figurehead of the Athletic Commission. So anyway, they asked him who his secretary was, and he didn't know. So yeah, he didn't know. So I knew Floyd was going. I mean, I just caught Floyd like in 1995, we're together in Kansas City, Missouri, of course, for the Tommy Morrison Razor Ruddock fight. That's when I went and took Buster Douglas's trainer almost apart, reached across the table at him, and he wouldn't get up. Jack Russell or something. I think Jack Russell. He wouldn't get up, but... But, you know, how can I put this? It was a raucous occasion. There was no doubt about it. But Floyd said to me later, I talked to him in the elevator. He said to me, son, he goes, I knew you were serious when you came up to that man. I said, what do you mean, champ? He goes, well, I knew you were serious. That's why I got up and I just moved out the way, because I could see that look on your face that you meant business. I said, yeah, he wronged me. I said, you know, he called Peyton Scherer, the late Peyton Scherer, of course, was the boxing agent and manager for both Frankie Randall, who upset Julio Cesar Chavez, and Buster Douglas, who upset Mike Tyson. Anyway, he called Peyton Scherer, and he left this message on Peyton Scherer's answering machine. He said, you know, I hear Pedro's going to be doing the television for the Morrison-Ruddock fight with Burt Sugar in Kansas City. When I see him, I'm going to kick his ass. I'm just going to light him up. I'm going to sucker punch him. He won't even know what's happening. I'm going to hit that little Mexican, blah, 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 so hard, I'll knock him back across the border. Something like that. Not knowing I was Puerto Rican, not Mexican. Anyway, the bottom line is, he was talking that smack. So I saw him at the table. He was there with Floyd. I told him, mother ducker, get up. Bottom line is, the table cleared out. Jack didn't get up. And Floyd said to me, man, I knew you meant business. Floyd was always fun to be around. A classy guy. Never any words of malice. It was hard to get, I tried to interview him on things, and it's not like he didn't have the capabilities to answer. He just didn't want to answer in any type of negative way. He always wanted to be so positive when it came to the sport of boxing. Of course, a two-time world heavyweight champion, got knocked out by Ingemar Johansson. He didn't believe my boy, Eddie Machen. Eddie Machen started me in boxing in the late 1960s. We had a few fights together down at the Boys Club. Actually, he sat in the audience while I fought. But the bottom line is, Eddie Machen went over to Sweden and fought Ingemar Johansson, I think in 1962, and thought Johansson was a bum, and Johansson knocked him out, and then he fought Floyd Patterson for the title, and he knocked Patterson out, and of course they had that second fight, and Patterson knocked him out. But the bottom line is, live or die by the sword. He was also a great guy to be around. Ingemar Johansson, the Swedish world heavyweight champion. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it, your inside look into the world of boxing and mixed martial arts. Oscar De La Fishnets, who's that? You know, Oscar De La Hoya. Remember, he got caught in drag about 2008 by yours truly and TMZ. But the bottom line is, he's coming back September 11th against Vitor Belfort. We'll talk about that and more after the break. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Little Tower of Power with Tommy Bowles on lead. Oh! dropping in those stereotypes here and there. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a.k.a. WBC Boxing TV. Speaking of the WBC and their honorable El Presidente, Mr. Mauricio Sulaiman, the WBC has an interactive website. It's WBCBoxing.com. That's WBCBoxing.com. Today is the birthday of Lionel Butler. Who was Lionel Butler? He was a heavyweight contender or pretender, call him what you want, in the 1980s and 1990s. But the bottom line is in 1995, he fought Lennox Lewis. But before that, he fought Terry Davis, and I was a referee. I was a ring announcer over in Richmond, California, and it caused a riot. I think it was 1993, and it caused a riot. Of course, he beat up Terry Davis, knocked Terry Davis out. Terry Davis was a hometown favorite, a guy from Vallejo, California, who had lost a prior fight to Lionel Butler, of course, I think back in Georgia, something like that. So it was considered a bit of an upset. They thought that Terry can take care of him at home. Of course, it caused a riot. I remember begging the crowd, one of my first attempts at begging the crowd to chill. Come on, can you guys just chill? Like where they were tearing the place apart, the Richmond Auditorium. But anyway, Lionel Butler, today is his birthday. But in 1995, he fought Lennox Lewis up in Sacramento, California. Now, I had known Lionel Butler because of these fights I did with him, with Terry Davis, right? So he looked a lot like Mike Tyson. And I said to myself, man, this guy looks a little bit like Mike Tyson. Doesn't fight like Mike Tyson, but he looks a little bit like Mike Tyson. Anyway, he would later get an opportunity to play Mike Tyson in the movie, but he couldn't hold his punches back. He was hurting people. They offered him a role in Rocky IV, Rocky V, Rocky VI, Rocky IX, or something like that. Anyway, he tried to bust up Stallone. And he couldn't get the fact that, you know, you're not supposed to hurt guys. You're supposed to give guys a bit of a pass. But yeah, may he celebrate his birthday today. Speaking of birthdays, you would think that at almost 53 years old, Oscar De La Hoya, or Oscar De La Fishnets, was sort of like call it a day. Of course, he's going to take on Tyrone Woodley. They call him the problem child. He's an MMA fighter. He's 19-7-1. 19 wins, 7 losses, 1 draw. Of course, a former champion, I believe, at welterweight, 170 pounds. Of course, now Oscar De La Hoya, Oscar De La Fishnet, his biggest weight as far as his being competitive concerned was 160. But we all know when he was at 160, he wasn't, I mean, you know, come on. Once he got the gift with Felix Stern, he got destroyed by Bernard Hopkins. Not to say losing to Hopkins is a disgrace or anything like that. One of the greater, better middleweights in history. But, you know, Oscar's coming back September 11th against Tyrone Woodley. This is going to be a real fight. Not going to be an exhibition. Not going to be an MMA fight. There won't be any kicks involved, but Woodley's going to convert to boxing. Now, Woodley, I suppose, especially, thinks that he has these astute boxing skills, will be able to come out there and dominate Oscar De La Hoya. Well, Oscar hasn't fought, since like 2008, 2009 or something like that when Pacquiao destroyed him. I mean, Manny Pacquiao just beat him just beat him to death, right? And, of course, Oscar De La Hoya trying to be slick, trying to go down to 147 after not making that weight for a long time, thought he could do it. Guess what? It was the weight. I'm trying to say that he was going to beat Manny Pacquiao that night, but the fight would have indeed been competitive, and it wasn't that. So, anyway, it looks like Oscar and Vitor Belfort are going to hook this up. Take that back. Oscar and Vitor Belfort are going to hook this up on September 11th. On August 29th on Showtime pay-per-view, I got this confused. It's going to be live from Cleveland. This guy, Jake Paul, and you guys sent me a couple of emails, a couple of texts regarding Jake Paul. What do I think of Jake Paul? I don't know. I mean, he's 3-0 with 3 knockouts, but all 3 guys he's fought and never had a fight before. And that Ben Askren fight, his last fight, of course, when he defeated he's a wrestler. And to say he's a wrestler, he's a dirty wrestler. When I say dirty, that's a style. It's a dirty wrestling. That's how he sort of rock 'em, sock 'em, that kind of stuff. That's how Ben Askren sort of became a legitimate fighter and won some titles as far as across the pond was concerned, but not here in the United States. Never won the big title, the UFC title. Of course, got smoked by Jorge Masvidal in the blink of an eye, got knocked out like in 8 or 10 seconds, but, you know, When Jake Paul fights guys like that, I mean, what are you supposed to say? Now next time it's going to be Woodley. I mean, what are you supposed to say? I mean, bottom line is he beat up on that NBA star Nate Robinson. Remember Nate? Yeah, Nate thought he could box. Nate got hurt, man. I wonder if Nate can see straight right now. I mean, one of those nights where like maybe you have permanent double vision for the rest of your life. I mean, that's how he got the snot kicked out of him. No doubt about that, Nate Robinson. And then he had his debut against some guy named Ali Gibb. And don't confuse Ali Gibb with anything else because Ali never fought after that. In other words, you're looking at some of these pro fights that some of these fighters have, especially the guys that are manufactured. You look at their records, you realize some of these guys just they turn pro. These opponents they have turn pro and never have a fight again. Coincidence? I don't think so. Anyway, Jake Paul going to do his thing against Tyron Woodley. Am I excited? No, I'm not. But the bottom line is I think it's boxing fans and YouTube fans and TikTok fans and all this kind of Instagram fans, this kind of stuff. They're all flocking to watch this guy fight. So what can I say other than if you enjoy watching him fight and it's entertaining to you, more power to you. But that's going to be August the 29th on Showtime pay-per-view from Cleveland, Ohio. Speaking of Cleveland, you know, I wish I could get Don Elbaum on the show. Don Elbaum is like he's like 90 years old now, 89, somewhere around there, 90 years old. But we hung out together, went around the world. But he was a boxing manager, promoter, you name it. I remember one time he fought Chris Bird, the former IBF heavyweight champion. Of course, Chris Bird had a sister. I can't remember her name right now. But anyway, the bottom line is the Bird family had an elder Bird. I think it was Kurt Bird or something like that. Anyway, but the bottom line is Don Elbaum stepped in and fought him one night in a fight where he was promoting the card. In other words, he's a promoter of the event, and he has a fighter come up short. So Don Elbaum puts on the gloves, and I think he went the distance with Chris Bird's father. I kid you not. Anyway, Elbaum, of course, brought us Don King. Some people say that was a sin. Other people say it wasn't. You know, my wording on Don King goes like this. I've known him since the 80s, okay? He started taking my call. Actually, I think he called me the first time. That's what happened. Well, I ripped him up in some major daily. I was running in anyway, so he calls up, or he has one of his guys calls up, and he's, oh, I want to take the Pedro. I couldn't believe it was Don King's voice. Hey, come on, you gotta be kidding me. So then I realized, hey, you know, he's only a one in a million voice, so that was him. So he and I got together, and we've been professional friends and rivals at the same time over the years. Of course, I haven't seen him in a long time now, but when he was in his prime, I'm telling you, man, people laugh about it, but when he was in his prime, boxing was really rocking. It just was. And whether you didn't dislike him immensely, of course, you know, I have positive interactions with him. Other people have negative interactions with him. Of course, I'm not going to have the same relationship with him that Tim Witherspoon had. But then Tim Witherspoon took $80,000 or $100,000 in advance money he didn't want to pay for. That's what I was told. In other words, remember Witherspoon? All these guys says, Don King cheated me. Well, listen. If you take $80,000 of a $100,000 purse and you take that in advance, you're only going to get $20,000. So when you're sitting there payday going, hey, how come I only get 20 grand? Because you took the 80 grand in advance. But fighters don't want to realize that. Okay. So a lot of fighters have turned against King. I'm not trying to say Don didn't make more money than you. I'm not saying that. But guess what? When he made more money than you, you made more money than anybody else. Case in point, James Page. His mother came to me and said, you know, oh, Pedro, they want to put James in a fight with Felix Trinidad, and they want to give him $1.4 million. I said, right on. I said, the most he's ever made in his life is 100 grand. I said, let's do this, $1.4 million. And I said, Mrs. Page, don't turn the page on this one. Get it done, right? So she goes, I don't think so. I said, why don't you think so? She goes, because Carl King is his manager. I said, yeah. I said, with Carl as his manager, he's gotten these fights. And if Carl wasn't his manager, he wouldn't be getting this fight with Tito Trinidad. And, of course, he was a 147-pound champion. I talk about James Page of the WBA. So he's stepping up to fight Felix Trinidad at 154. So he wouldn't – his title wasn't at risk. Okay, he was going to step up, make some money at $1.4 million. But, herein lies the thing. Carl King was taking a third as a manager. He was taking a third, and some other trainer was taking 10%. I think it was to get like 700 grand before taxes, was James Page. And his mother wasn't going for it. She said 800 grand. She said she just wasn't going for it. So what happened? She poo-pooed on me on the phone. I'm telling her, she goes, I think you dislike Don King. I said, no. I like James. James and I go back a long way before he started robbing banks, of course, here in Alabama. But before it became a bank robber, we were in the gym together. I mean, James Page was a pretty damn good fighter. He won the WBA crown. There was no WBO crown. Without a doubt, I mean, he was a good fighter. I'm WBA crown. No doubt about that. But then again, you know, start robbing banks and things start happening to you. And the reason why you're robbing banks is the fact that your mother didn't sign the deal with Don King. That's what that all boiled down to. I mean, check this out. He would have gotten 800 grand. And out of the 800 grand after taxes, maybe all that kind of good stuff, he maybe got $500,000. Be happy for the $500,000 because see, that $500,000 you were going to clear, James, and your mom, Mrs. Page, that $500,000 you were going to clear. Well, guess what? That fight you took with Sixhead Johnson, Al Sixhead Johnson, like Sixhead Lewis or something like that, the guy that knocked you into another world. Of course, I saw more than one guy one time when Ernie Chavez hit me, so it ain't no shame in seeing multiple guys across the ring. But when you see multiple guys, This is time to give it up. It's time to say goodbye. No doubt about that. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. Your inside look into the world of boxing, MMA. July 23rd, 1964. Smoking Joe Frazier wins the Olympic gold medal in Tokyo, Japan. Of course, speaking of Tokyo, the Olympics are going on there right now. That's why I sort of brought that up. I don't know how the boxing's going. I mean, you know, listen, Olympic boxing sort of became a bit of a cartoon show when they started letting pros fight. You don't let pros fight. You just don't. I mean, people say, well, you know, some of these other countries, they're amateurs are their pros. Well, if they're amateurs are their pros and they sort of are able to sneak in around that, more power to them. But the bottom line is, I don't think you guys like, I mean, they were talking about Vladimir Klitschko or Vitaly Klitschko coming back and fighting in the Olympics. Of course, Vitaly was supposed to be the 1996 Olympian for the country of Ukraine, but he tested positive for, get this, Flintstone vitamins, aka steroids. And then Vladimir Klitschko stepped in. Of course, his brother would go on and win the 1996 Olympic gold medal and, of course, become the heavyweight champion. Got knocked out, came back. Give him some props. When Emanuel Stewart put him back together, he was a broken man. I'm talking about Vladimir Klitschko. Of course, Emanuel realized, you know, if you fought and you fought a little safer and you kept your chin in, this and that, and you fought to your size. I mean, like, Klitschko would fight down. Klitschko would try to fight like a welterweight, throwing combinations and things like that. And that just wasn't happening for a heavyweight, because your cardio, you're going to gas sooner or later, okay? And Klitschko gassed at times, and other times he didn't take punches well, but man, my man Emanuel Stewart, I was really thinking about him this week, but he brought us the second coming of Vladimir Klitschko. He was a class act. I want to get emotional right here, but the Goldfather, of course, I was remembering because I saw a clip of him last night on YouTube. It was one of his last clips, and he was looking really old, and it's really hurt me to look at him and realize that, you know, he was reaching the end. I mean, it was coming. The crescendo was coming. Of course, colon cancer, stomach cancer, whatever you want to say it is. Of course, me and his second, one of his assistants, argued over the cause of his death. I didn't know how he died. I said, I just read what was in the newspaper. She said that was wrong, with some type of colonitis or something like that. Colon cancer, I believe, is what it was. But the bottom line is, when he passed a few years ago, not only did the world of boxing lose a good man, but the world lost a good man. Yeah, he had problems and he had flaws. There's no doubt about it. Emanuel Stewart was a flawed man. He liked to gamble. But outside of that, he was really a kind guy. And he fed a lot of people and he treated me like gold. And what can I say? I truly miss the Gold Father. No doubt about that. Emanuel Stewart, may you rest in peace. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. A little Tower of Power at the break. Speaking of only so much oil on the ground, the title of the tune. Gas this week, it looks like I can't avoid a $4 gallon in California. So gas is out of hand. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Check out some of the other birthdays today, 51 years old, Peter McNeely. Remember him? Yeah, the Pizza Hut guy. Sort of screwed up, had that tight fight with Mike Tyson in 1995. I remember Don King having me up to like 3 o'clock in the morning, 2:30 in the morning, doing these promos like in Poland and all this kind of good stuff. Yeah, we're going to have the Mike Tyson, Peter McNeely fight, the comeback of Mike Tyson. We're doing all these radio promos all around the world, doing this from the MGM Grammar or the Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas. I can't remember what it was. Anyway, he was keeping me up to all hours of the night. Of course, Peter McNeely flopped in one round, but he really could have been an inspiration as far as like making money is concerned, because he sort of had that geeky type of thing going on, and he was a nut. So when he did that Pizza Hut commercial, he was on his way, I thought, to potential commercial stardom, okay? But the bottom line is he got into a DUI, and that was the end of that. So shame on him, no doubt about that. But his father, Tom McNeely, fought Floyd Patterson for the World Heavyweight title. Of course, that was in 1961. I think he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated magazine. I kid you not. So Tom McNeely, Peter McNeely, of course, that is boxing history, no doubt about that. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it, your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA, of course, coming to you live from the Sports Byline Studios in the City of By the Bay, San Francisco, California. Hour number two is forthcoming after the news. We'll be talking boxing. We'll bring in Mr. Stitch Duran, Jacob Stitch Duran. He and I go back about 45 or 50 years. Maybe we go back so far. I don't want to tell you how far we go back, but the bottom line is he is the undisputed heavyweight champion of Cutman. me being the undisputed heavyweight champion of the radio airwaves. So we're sort of hanging together. Two heavyweight champions in the next hour live here on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. So if you got some questions for us, questions for Stitch Duran. Of course, Stitch is talking about a CBD brand. Maybe, you know, Stitch, listen, I wouldn't doubt if Stitch went out and got himself a marijuana brand. Cause, you know, all these guys are doing it now. Gary Payton, Scottie Pippen. I mean, different guys have got this, these little marijuana strains going on. And of course, Stitch Duran, known around the world for his CBD use, he's put together a nice CBD product, no doubt about that. But they want him to go into the world of marijuana. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens as far as Stitch's reaction to that's concerned. And hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide coming to you on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, the American Forces Network, iTunes, Stitcher.com, Anchor.com. I keep going and going, but the bottom line is, oh, last week, Jermell Charlo, of course, and Brian, Cristana went 12 rounds for the 154-pound title. Now, my problem with Brian was he lost the last three rounds. If you want to give up 25% of a fight and then you're happy to get a draw, you lost and you know it. So that was what I was reading through as far as his vibes are concerned post-fight. Of course, Brian Castano, a draw, of course, with Jermell Charlo, the 154-pound champion of every sanctioning body, but the WBO, of course, that was the title belt that Castano was bringing to the dance. They will hook it up in a rematch, according to Mr. Charlo. More power to him if he goes for this fight again, because pound for pound, it was a good fight for boxing, no doubt about that. Charlo and Castano. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Stay tuned for hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC Boxing TV after the break. Don't forget, you can always go to WBCBoxing.com on their interactive website. That's WBCBoxing.com, a proud sponsor of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. My name is Pedro Fernandez, producer of Scott Cuddy. Stick around for hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide after the news.